This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Vicky Marie Buchanan,
Mike Lawrence,
Anne Weir,
Diane McConnell,
and I'm Stuart Burks.
You were talking about items that you have, historic items that you have.
You've got boxing gloves from your...
My grandfather was an Australasian welterweight boxing champion.
Yeah.
Born here in Palmerston North, and his gloves were recently on display at Te Manawa, and I'm now looking after them until we decide as a family where they are finally going to, you know, to be.
Mm. And you find that the family's prepared to sort of hold these? So is the family heirloom now?
It is, and it's always been something that our family's been very aware of the significance of some of these things. I think the fact that my grandfather was born here and had a business in Palmerston North on the square.
Yeah.
Sort of, so I think
What sort of business was it?
Fine china and hardware.
Oh, okay. Fine china.
Mm. What was his name?
Watchorn. Frank Morris Jeffrey Watchorn.
So fine china, where did that come from?
It was imported.
Yeah.
And so you had to have overseas funds to import it.
Mm.
And so my grandmother used to go by boat to the UK, taking the money over so that they had overseas funds so he could import the china.
Oh, so all the, I'm just trying to think, all the bone china.
Yes, yes.
So Spode, was it?
Spode, mainly was Royal it? Albert and things like that. So yes, there's a fair bit of fairly fine, good china floating around in our family.
You see those in china cabinets in homes now, don't you? You don't.
And I, on good occasions, I use my Susie Cooper dinner set.
Oh, my mother had a Susie Cooper coffee set.
Susie Cooper, where's that from?
I don't know. Presumably England.
I think it's England.
That's it. Yes. Okay. Yeah,
she had Spode as well. She got a lot of the Spode, which is all white, sort of crinkly. Crinkly china, I think.
You might find things became sort of well known here because they're imported in bulk or something that we didn't notice in England, probably. Because I saw even, what was it, when I saw here shops would be saying, you know, a sale of Manchester. And you think, what, Manchester?
Yeah.
Just meant they'd had a shipment of linen and things from Manchester, I think. Is it just the sort of sheets and towels and things that you call Manchester here? Or
well,
is it broader than that?
We were so aligned, weren't we? We were so aligned being part of the Commonwealth and the British. And so we have a lot of the British traditions, our generation anyway, I think probably with our kids, like silver placemats and coasters and silver cutlery.
Yeah.
Whereas I remember my daughter-in-law saying, I wouldn't even know what to do with silver. Do you wash it or do you...
Well, it was a nuisance, wasn't it?
You don't put it in the dishwasher.
No.
Definitely. No.
And definitely if you've got the bone-handled ones.
Yes.
And so I have actually got a bone-handled silver fish set. So it's the one with the blunt knives.
Yeah, yes.
Did you have, was it, I think we had something called Brasso that you used.
Yes. Well, that's not brass. You use silver. Silver.
Silvo.
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 And Brasso on brass.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh,
and you always got them out the day before or 2 days before.
Yeah, you have to
polish
clean them all up.
Take off the tarnish before you use them.
Yeah. And then take off the glad wrap that each one had been wrapped in to try and reduce the tarnish.
Yes, yes.
So you take it off and then you'd clean it and your hands would be filthy and the house, you know, the table would be chaotic and 24 hours later it would be this beautiful dining table.
Yeah.
Silver and crystal glasses. Yes, I remember that. Webb Corbett crystal glasses.
Yes, Webb Corbett and the crystal bowls. Mm.
Oh, yes.
You know, for the fruit salad. Or
the trifle. Yeah.
Or the trifle, yeah.
You know, the better salad bowl was the green one that looked like was made of shaped like lettuce leaves with lobster claw handles.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, I remember that.
I've got one of those.
Uh-huh. Was that imported then? Or?
That would have definitely been from my grandfather.
Okay.
I'm a shock. Okay. I've been intending to do some downsizing, and I look at all my silver is in a cupboard, and it's in a shelf. So there's quite a bit of it. And I look at it, and it echoes what my daughter-in-law said, and I think, when I die, all they're going to do is get it and go, biff, I'm sure. Mm. And I think, I should just get rid of it now, probably, because I don't use it either. We don't use it.
It's a lot of work, those things. If you can't put them in the dishwasher to clean, or if they're very fiddly to clean, like all the polishing you have to do.
The crockery, of course, particularly if it's the very fine ones with the gold.
Oh, any gold, yes. You can't do that.
Yes. It's all hand washing.
Yes.
But there's a lot of this stuff now in the Salvation Army shops, you know, the thrift shops.
Yes.
I'm seeing really good china, beautiful china. Sometimes full dinner sets. Yes. You can imagine it was great grandmother's passed down. Yes. Nobody's dared use it.
Yes.
And I love it now when I've got friends who are pulling out the old dinner sets.
Yes.
And they're using them.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it'll be all these 80-year-old women going in there and say, I don't like my daughter-in-law. I'll buy lots of this
to get my No.
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 There's people who I do know some people who have a lot of that, and they're downsizing. They're just saying, well, yeah, it's not valued. It doesn't fit the sorts of houses that our children and grandchildren might have.
Lifestyles and, I'm in that little quandary at the moment.
Of what to do with it.
What to do with it. Yeah, your heart is still in it because it's history.
Well, I've got a little collection of espresso coffee cups that are... And my original one was given to me by my grandparents as a child. And I thought it was just a child's cup and saucer because it was a little shape. Mm. But I think it might actually be German.
Yes.
So it's a proper little...
Yeah.
And so that... Yeah. I've had that one since I was a young child. And I've made another collection, so I've got quite a few that I've found from antique shops.
Mm. Coming back to China, does anybody know why it's called China? It's got nothing to do with the country, has it? Its origins?
Oh, good question.
China clay.
Porcelain.
Comes to mind.
Porcelain.
China clay.
Porcelain.
It might be the style that they...
Bone china. And bone china, was it because crushed bones, was it? Of what?
I don't know. Into Google.
Yes.
Into Google.
We'll fast forward from... back in the 1960s, 70s, and come to 2025.
So when you were young, I remember stories of people who lived in sort of stately homes in England, and they'd have these sort of painting masterpieces on the wall, and they'd be playing cowboys and Indians and firing arrows all over and everything, and so no regard for that. Did you have to be really careful with your bone china when you were young? You know, were your parents really protective?
Yes. Well, when you went to your granny's house, certainly you had to be careful because they wouldn't have had any children, and... as a youngster to visit there, you'd be careful there.
Yeah. Sunday afternoon tea.
We always used ours every Sunday for Sunday midday dinner.
Yes.
Mm.
And Sundays we used to go visiting. I remember on Friday my mother would do baking, or I would do it Saturday morning. And it was always fill up the tins because people would come visiting, or we go visiting and take things to people. And then out came the bone china tea set and things like that when the people came visiting.
Yep. Now, according to AI, fine porcelain crockery is called china because it was first developed and exported from China.
Ah,
it became synonymous with fine, high-quality porcelain after Europeans were impressed by its beauty and durability. And hence Manchester, which was stuff that came from Manchester, which Kiwis were impressed by its durability. I suppose. I don't know. So, based on China. Yep.
So do they get the clay from China? Is that what it's suggesting?
I think you could use the clay if you get that sort of clay, and there's different clay deposits in different places.
Yeah.
Potters in New Zealand, is you know, different parts of the country have different sorts of clays and so on. I think Nelson's noted
for some Tomuka pottery.
Tomuka,
yes, brown.
Goodness me. The Tomuka dinner sets were definitely my era.
Yes.
Yeah, lots they were very Tomuka. Popular.
They're still around.
Yes.
Yeah, you can get some.
The one that you see in the, you know, second hand shops, but they've got quite decent prices on them. They're not $2. So it's come back.
Either that, or if you've got a set and there was something broken and you need to replace it.
There's a warehouse at the top of Summerhill Drive, and it's a big warehouse, and he imports, brings in the Temuka, because I've met him. Yes, and the guy there brings in the Temuka, and you can go, if you haven't got pieces, you can go in there and he'll have them in there. And they, when I was talking to him about 3 years ago, 3 years ago, but 3 years ago, he was very busy, and it's still a very popular China pottery dinner set.
Yeah. It used to be made in Timaru, I think.
Well, here in Palmerston North, there was Barry Doyle was a potter, and he was very well known for his mugs and plates and things. They're sort of wax resist a lot with the blue and black and so on, and plates and bowls. He died some years back.
Is he in Manawatu, is he?
He was local, yes.
Is he? I bought my my coffee set, big coffee set, for up in Northland.
Yeah, he did sort of basically got into he took up pottery, probably not that young, but really got into it and made it into a business and so on. But the danger with that is all the dust from the pottery, breathing in the fine dust, and it's bad for your lungs.
He
had some certain standard wax resist patterns. So you got, you know, you have the clay, you put some glaze on, put some wax, and then another colour on top, and the glaze doesn't stick to the wax. Then it burns off in the kiln, so you get the patterns.
We don't have little art shops now, do we? As a child, I remember we used to go with my mother. We'd go in and potter and look all around the art shops, where you'd get lovely pottery and you'd get homespun things, or you'd get weavings, you know, all those sorts of things.
The Square Edge have
an art shop, and it's a really, really good little art shop in there.
Yeah, but they've also various times they have different displays. It was interesting because it was council run, and they had, in fact, some people who became quite successful commercial potters here started off there. And in Christchurch, they've got, I can't remember what it's called, but they've got their arts sort of centre thing. It was in the old stone buildings.
Which was fantastic and very
dynamic. But what they did here, they said, this is for people who are starting out. So once someone got successful, they said, right, now you should move on, and other beginners can come in. Whereas if they'd said, yes, okay, you're successful, you stay there, and that would be a magnet and helping other beginners to take off. So
see, Fielding's still got their one over there. You can go in and there's that Edith, forgotten her name. Does the beautiful weaving. So there's her weaving, which is always very hard to get past. It's beautiful. And then there's pottery, and then there's painting and drawing, and there's a lot. And the displays change.
Yeah. So that's a gallery?
It's a gallery, sort of sales stuff as well, if
you're a member of their society.
Right.
You can exhibit through there, I think.
Yeah, I think basically artists, et cetera, can give the art centre or shop their work, and if it's sold, then the shop gets a percentage of that.
Right.
It would be one of the nicest local ones for getting a range. Yeah. We used to have, remember the gallery upstairs opposite the library entrance?
Yes, I remember that.
Stu Schwartz had that.
What was the name of the gallery, though? Can you remember?
I had it for a long time. Beautiful
artwork and fine timberwork.
And metalwork and pottery and all sorts of treasure trove of beautiful things.
If you go to the U3A New Zealand History Group, there's a spot there at the beginning of the meeting where people can show their stuff that they've collected, and Stuart Schwartz invariably comes up with something plural that he's...
He's had for a long time plans of setting up a Schwartzonian Museum of Kiwiana. So he's been collecting it for years, and I hear stories of sort of his poor wife, perhaps, but because the house is getting more and more full of all this stuff, and he keeps finding new treasures in different places.
But there's still the little...
The Taylor Jensen Gallery.
That was lovely. I think they are reducing around the country, though. you know, you used to go in every town or somewhere and you'd see a nice little crafty art shop and you'd go in there and mitch around and buy little bits.
Probably now there's more selling online. There's now international websites where you can look for those. One of my daughters and her partner have an online business. They got together in Britain and were doing stuff, selling their own art design thing online. And now they've moved to New Zealand and carry on from here because it's transportable, right?
Great, isn't it?
Mm. Well, we were talking about some of the things in New Zealand. We've adopted the British terminology for, like, Manchester.
Mm. No, that's not a British terminology. That's what I mean. Why is it in Britain we would never call it Manchester?
What did you call it?
Well, there were sheets and blanks. They could be from anywhere. I think it's called Manchester here because you would get... here you get bulk shipments a few times a year. So you just say, a new shipment arrived from Manchester, and so we've got all these sheets and towels and so on. And then it'd be, over time, it'd just get shortened. Manchester sale. It's become the term for it. But not in Britain. No, I had no idea what Manchester was when I came here.
But do you remember, seem to recall that in the old days that couches or sofas called them Chesterfield?
The Chesterfield.
Yes, that was probably a brand name because that was common internationally.
That's a good question, City. Mm-hmm. We should all have our Googles out to see what's
Where it came from.
City. It sounds French.
It does sound French, yes. Doesn't it? Mm.
And was it just, you were a little bit posh, so you had a city. We got rid of the Chesterfield and we've now got a city.
You have a chaise lounge with a reclining nude or something.
Yeah.
And that's now a day bed, which is not the same as a chaise lounge.
But you think that what a reclined lazy boy is, it's pretty close to the...
The combination,
when I think, do you think of it, isn't
it? Yes,
Oh, no, this is interesting. Yeah, because in here it's saying the term Manchester is used in Australia because of stuff from Manchester. But it's saying, that it used to be Manchester Goods and then it became simply Manchester. Goods with a capital M became Manchester with a lowercase M. And it says the term used to be used in Britain as well, although it's fallen into complete disuse. I was born there in 1950, never ever heard that term being used.
Possibly you weren't out looking for any Manchester.
Well, but probably by 5 years old, 10 years old, you'd see it in the... notice it. It was completely new to me coming here. Mm. Eh?
You'd hear the term used by others.
Except because I would have thought if they'd used it then, it would have seemed a bit strange, I think. I was from Leeds, and Manchester is just the other side of the Pennines, so to say I'm going to buy some Manchester or something.
Perhaps it just wasn't used in Leeds.
No. Yes, probably, yeah. we're not going to buy their stuff. We'll buy...
There's no town in England called Haberdashery, is there?
not that I know. But you've got Hoover and Vacuum. There isn't a town called Hoover, but you've got Hoover's as opposed to Vacuum Cleaner.
Yes.
Because Hoover's the brand name.
Your British people are still using that term for hoovering, aren't they? They're going to hoover their house.
Yes. For hoovering, is that? Vacuum Cleaner. Yes. Yeah.
You said Haberdashery. That was another shop. Remember going into the haberdashery shops all that stuff, fascinating stuff, ribbons,
lovely,
and laces.
Yes.
I guess in a funny way, the warehouse and places like that put a lot of those smaller, specific shops out of business.
Yeah, well, you've got Spotlight, that has which has a far greater range than the warehouse for that sort of thing.
Mm.
My mother used to work for a draper. I don't think they have drapers anymore.
No, drapers aren't there anymore.
Yeah. My grandfather's father was a draper. In a square
So a draper drapes curtains. What else are they selling? Fabric.
Drapes.
Was that the Cobb store too in Fielding? Drapery, I think.
There was one, yes.
That was the Cobb store, and then there was the Derrick store.
That's right,
and
yes.
And the Derrick sold something else, wasn't it? I think the Cobbs were a drapery. or haberdashery, or combination of all of it.
It's interesting. Barbers, though, it used to be barber shops were giving men short back and sides haircut, and that was about it. Yeah. Now, suddenly, I'm not. Some still called barbers, but often they're, you get people who cut men's and women's hair, and a lot of the men's stuff now. In fact, the son of a friend of mine he's now left school. Even while he was still at Boys High, he was on, I don't know if it would be day release or something, but learning about doing sort of men's hairdressing, and he was doing it to his mates and stuff at home, and now he's sort of taken off with that. But it's all, there's these things called the fades, where you're having it really short on the sides and longer on the top, and designs and patterns cut into it, and things that apparently, to keep it looking good, you've got to go back every, you know, 3 or 4 weeks to have it redone. And it's not cheap, so it's a whole growing business instead of just going occasionally and saying, okay, take it all off. This stuff has got more So do you go to Mike? Do you go to a barber, or you do it yourself?
No, I go to a hairdresser. So I'm surrounded by women when I go in.
Yeah, you have a perm of that. Now, I'd have to say, if anyone's listening, there's a few. From here, I can see bits sticking out here and there. But that's more skin than hair. But rather like me, I'd have to say.
Yeah, well, a couple of months ago, she said, "Would I like it a bit short?" I said, "Well, let's give it a go." So she got out of, they look like sheep shears.
Yes.
Do I want a number 4 or a number 6 or a number 8? Will that mean nothing to me?
That's all the length, and I wouldn't know what to ask for with that. But
you're talking about historical things. My mother had a pair of those that you could cut hair with.
Yes.
But for some reason, we used to go to Grand Rapson, and the boys would get their hair cut with one of those. So that's going back 6 to 7
someone
years.
Someone in the family would
do it. Yeah, they had this electrical thing.
Oh, electrical.
And it would...
Okay.
So that's where the boys were getting their hair cut.
Well, now we've got our battery-powered things you can get attachments on and use that for trimming things.
Yeah. Because I cut all the men's hair in our house, and I've got one.
Right. Do you do the fancy?
No.
Because apparently that's real art, what they're doing with the men's... old knife, not knife, blade shaving.
Yes.
Some of them are into that too, the hot cloth.
Okay.
And
all right.
Yes.
The cutthroat, strop and everything.
It is quite creative what they're doing.
And it's for some, I heard one talking on the radio, and he was saying it's about conversation. The key part of it is talking, and he was talking about men and mental health, and that they have a role, that they are sitting there with men.
Right,
the man has got nothing to do,
yes,
and so you start the conversation while you're working.
Sometimes, and it depends, because you've got a lot maybe from overseas whose English might not be that good now, and they're doing it. But
I didn't like those places, because invariably the conversation was either racing or rugby, and neither of them interest me.
No, he was talking about personal stuff. He was talking about using his barbering.
Oh, that's like the idea that your bartender is a counsellor and that sort of thing, which doesn't always happen either. But in the ideal or in films or maybe from time to time.
I think he actually had a point with what he was talking about, what he was doing. He was saying, you've got these men who are actually they're sitting there, and if you start talking to them,
and you get the cutthroat raver out,
but
and
they go. Probably because it's actually quite a tactile thing as well. So you're
in your bubble.
And so therefore...
And he's listening.
And so the conversations possibly tend to be a lot more personal than anywhere else, because they are that close.
Except if you go in those places, you got 2 or 3 people having their hair cut and several people sitting there, and you'd overhear any conversation you're
not
having.
Not necessarily. No. Some of them are very small.
Yeah.
They're very, very small places, and that's part of it. And if you want your haircut, you have to be out there in a line, and there'll be a seat or something. But they're not like a women's hairdressing salon with lots. Mm. They're much smaller. His theory was make it into a male-safe
place to come and talk.
Mm.
Yeah, but often you find actually these days women going in there and cutting men's hair. And actually, because I was talking to one who was cutting my hair. I said, yeah, which did she prefer? Because she used to do hairdressing and said, oh, men much better because it's short. You can have a nice conversation. But with women, you might be doing something that takes an hour and a half or something, and just having something to say for an hour and a half. It gets harder.
Before the days of electric shavers, obviously most men would do their shaving at home with whatever they used. But you could go to the barber and get a shave there. And then electric shavers came into fashion. And the barber shops would have electric razor there, and you pay a couple of shillings and you could use their razor and have a shave and then walk away again. But of course then people bought their own.
Yeah, well in Britain, I mean I used, until not that long ago actually, I just used a safety razor all the time, you know, rather than an electric razor, because they do cut closer, but the safety razor is, except then there was a time, now we've got these plastic safety razors with three or five blades in and you throw them away after so many uses, whereas the old ones, they were sort of metal and you get the blades and you just replace them and there'd be a single blade.
Yes,
and
two sides though.
It was, and it was getting hard. So you have one of those and you just have to spend a bit for the new blades every now and then, and they'd last for a long time. I thought they were fine, but then it got harder to get the replacement blades because of all these plastic ones. And there was one time there's some sort of promotion, you bring in your old razor and we'll give you a set of these plastic ones. So people were going and handing in their old safety razors which meant then they'd have to keep on buying the new plastic ones.
Is the name Gillette still around?
I'm sure it is.
But they're plastic. Pretty sure I've seen them.
Wilkinson's sword was another one.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. It does shave better than the electric razor.
Yeah.
But electric are more convenient.
I think all the men say that too. You know, if you gave all the men a shaver and then tried the clipper, you know, the electric one, they'd all say that the shaver is actually more efficient and closer to the...
Yeah, but you've got to be in the right place, and it's messing with the... Yeah. You know, you could be going to work, forgot to shave, you get the razor out of the glove box
and just shave.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programmes can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programmes is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is... manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.